Dr. Sam Jones from my local vet joins me. G'day, Sam.
Morning, Johnny.
You weren't going to get away with this today without me playing this.
I haven't heard that one before, mate.
I'm sure you have, but I'm never going to miss that opportunity.
Oh, it's great, isn't it?
There it is. There we go. I just had to get that one out of me. Now we can just get into the interview, mate.
Well, you would have had a few listeners surely thinking, someone's going to play that eventually. Come on.
Someone, yeah. Surely.
They haven't done it.
So. Are you kidding me?
No.
I thought you were being facetious.
No. Well, I actually haven't heard it on radio before. People do mention it to me in the consult room. They'll
right.
say, oh, you know, do you love that, Jones? That song, Dr. Jones. But and they do start singing it, but not on radio
but
before.
Does anyone then come up with, you see, Dr. Jones, there is nothing you can possess that I cannot take away.
And what is that from?
That's Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Is it? Jeez. No, they haven't done that one.
Dr. Jones.
Yeah.
Harrison
yeah,
Ford.
Yeah. No, they haven't done that one
yet. Well, there we go. It's a day of firsts here today.
Johnny, have you got a pet?
Because
if you haven't, I think you should book an appointment, come in so we can just actually act that out. I would really enjoy that, Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know, anything can happen in the consult room.
You know what? I lost my two dogs recently.
Oh, that's a shame.
They were both nearly 16.
Oh, yeah.
So one of them...
litter or...?
No. One of them I'd had, he was a bulldog pug. He was my best mate. I'd had him for ever.
Mm.
The other one was a rescue that we got last year. And when we lost Frank, poor old Lofty... He just said, I've had enough as well.
Ah,
the most beautiful souls.
They were connected.
Yeah, but even just over the space of a year, they just became so tight, you know.
Mm.
But yeah.
Yeah, it's sad, isn't it?
It is.
We had to say goodbye to Digby. He was my Labrador puppy initially, you know, and for 12 years and my best mate. And he'd come to work with me, you know, and he actually, it was quite scary. The way it unfolded with him was we had a film crew in the clinic, and they were just wanting to film various bits and pieces. They said, oh, you're able to take an x-ray of a dog for us so we can get some footage? And I said, yeah, sure, Digby's here, so we'll get an x-ray of his chest. And he was fine. He was absolutely fine. Anyway, we just x-rayed his chest, and lo and behold, he had, you know, cancer throughout his chest. But he wasn't showing any clinical signs. And in a way, Johnny, that was a blessing because I was able to say, oh, okay, I know that you know, he's going to go soon, but I got to have that time with him.
Yeah.
So he from there on forwards, he was laid up on the couch, and you know, he had all these privileges that you get when you've got sort of like a terminal disease, you know.
Yes. My dogs, once they got older, were allowed on the couch too. Because they weren't allowed on the couch.
When you say older, you mean from 6 months of age, from the moment you got them.
Oh, yeah. Man, my dogs, they rule the roost in my place. Well, they don't, but they do, you know?
Mm. Not like a cat, not like an arrogant kind of ruling the roost, like, this is actually my house and you should be paying me rent.
Exactly. The cat knocks on your door and says, your rent's a week late.
Yeah, you're going to have to sleep out on the porch.
The dogs just command your decision-making process in life. They absolutely control it.
Mm.
And since, you know, this is the first time I'm dog-free in 15 years.
Mm.
And I'm like, oh, I've got to get home for the boys. Oh, no, I don't.
Yeah, at least big space.
Oh, okay, do you want to go on this on the weekend? And my brain's going, well, how long are we going to be out for? Do I have to stay the night? Do I have to get someone to look after the dogs? Mm. Can the dogs come? But it's like this huge, big hole.
It's a big space.
We're going into a different discussion. We should have talked about this.
Yeah.
We should have said how to deal with losing your pet.
It's tough, and they actually do have helplines now specifically for that, which is absolutely necessary. I mean, the connection, you can't underestimate the power of the connection between, you know, people and animals and their pets and, you know, birds. I've never owned a bird, but certainly it's been documented that the bond between a human and a bird is incredibly strong. But, I mean, same goes for all pets, really, you know. It leaves a big hole in your heart when they go.
My Auntie Kay had a galah called Banjo, and it would just listen to everything and literally parrot everything back. And if she stubbed her toe, Banjo would curse for
it. I can imagine. I've seen a few videos of, what is it, African greys. You know, I think they've got an incredible vocabulary. The amount of things that they're so smart, those birds. And they can just reproduce, you know, virtually every sound on the planet, you know.
Good on them.
They're amazing, yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, what we are, I've got to call it straight off the back. What we're here to talk about is how to make sure your pets are safe, warm and healthy during winter.
Mm.
But I've got Ali from Moorpark Beach, so we might as well just go straight into Ali's question, if that's okay, Dr. Jones.
Absolutely.
Dr. Jones, I'm going to call you that all day now. Ali from Moorpark Beach, you've got a question about Aragard.
Yes, good morning. Sorry about the loss of your dog.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks, Ali. Both of us.
Yeah, it is heartbreaking. But I have a little dog now, Jack Russell Cross, with sort of shortish hair. And being near the beach, she's getting these little lumps like little midgy sandfly bites on her.
Yep.
What is there something I can put on her to help prevent her being bitten by them?
There is.
That's safe for dogs.
Yes, there is, Ali. What you'll need to do is if you just call your local vet clinic, they'll be able to order in a product for you. You can spray it on. It's very safe for dogs, and it will deter insects from landing on them. We often use it for dogs that get insect bites on their ears, and it can be really traumatic, causes a lot of irritation and itchiness. So we spray that area, and it's very effective. I can't tell you what the product is. I actually can't even remember the name of it, but there's not going to be too many out there that are veterinary approved, and they'll just order it in from the wholesaler for you, and then you can just spray that on, and it's very effective.
All right, so that's safer than buying something off a supermarket shelf that we would use ourselves.
Yeah, this is the thing, is that animals typically have a very different, in some respects they have a different kind of metabolic processes than we have. And yeah. So we've got to be very careful about what products. We can't really ever assume because it's safe in a human that it'll be safe in a dog. For example, if you gave a cat Panadol, it would almost certainly die. So, you know, Panadol is extremely toxic to cats. So you just got to be very kind of careful about what products you do and don't use. And the safest bet will be to actually use a animal-approved, product that's going to deter insects from...
Okay.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah.
All right, well, I'll get in contact with my vet. Thank you very much.
Give them a call. Yeah, no worries. It'll be an over-the-counter, so you won't need a consultation. They'll order it in and away you go.
Okay. Oh, that's even better.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very
Ali.
Much. Have a lovely day.
Have a lovely day, Ali. There you go. That's a problem. Solve it straight away.
Yeah, the insects can be a bit of a problem. I mean, less so typically this time of year. But the main thing we're seeing, or that we're preparing for here, Johnny, is, osteoarthritis. The elderly pets this time of year is when we've got to start being mindful. It's getting cold. And, you know, for some dogs that live outside, you really want to make sure that they're warm overnight,
What are the signs?
That's a good question, because they can be very subtle and people often won't necessarily pick up on it if it's this subtle, but it can be something as sort of benign as just slowing down or not walking quite as fast. We're not wanting to walk quite as far on their walk. If a client, someone's doing like a 5K walk once a day or something, and the dog just seems to get to sort of 4Ks and starts to slow down, that's a sign. That's them telling you this is too much for them, And certainly if you're taking your dog for a walk and afterwards they seem a bit lame or slow to get up, slow to get down, so some dogs will circle for ages before they sit down or they'll just really crawl up from a resting position. That would be an indicator. If they're having difficulty or they're very slow going up and down stairs, that's another really good sign. So sometimes it'll be the day after a big walk that they'll be either a bit lame or slow to move. So if you're seeing this thing, you think, oh, he's a bit slow today. That to me is a really important red flag.
It's like us.
Yeah, well,
I've got a million old football injuries.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh man, my ankle and my shoulder and it's just like that, right?
Yeah. It's the cooler temperature. It sort of it does exacerbate the clinical signs of osteoarthritis. But actually, the cool thing about this disease, well, I guess there's nothing really cool about it, but the good thing is that there's lots you can do for your dog at home, including and the most important thing for dogs that are diagnosed with osteoarthritis is having them lean, right? You obviously you don't want them too skinny, but most dogs that we see, at least, in clinical practice are overweight, either significantly overweight or at least a little bit overweight. Now for the older dogs, and those dogs any age dog with arthritis, reducing their body weight makes a massive impact on their comfort because it's the weight loading on the joint that's causing a real problem, which is why swimming is a great exercise for a dog that's got osteoarthritis, right? There's no weight bearing. The only challenge with swimming, I guess, is that if you're going to do it at the beach, the sand is a real problem because when they're digging in, when you're in the sand, you've really got to work hard to get through it. That will exacerbate.
Oh, I thought that'd be good for them, the sand. I thought it'd be great for proprioception and things like that on their muscles and everything.
I know what you mean, but the thing is that when they're walking on sand, even though it's soft, it's a lot of hard work on the joints. It is a lot of hard work on the joints.
Right.
The water's obviously you know, nowhere near as thick as the sand, and they do, their little paws will just go straight through it without too much resistance. Yeah. And that's the thing. So so weight is a big one. Moderating their exercise, as I just sort of suggested, you know, to within tolerable limits is another big one. And then it's a really good idea to get your dog onto some sort of supplement that's got omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids. There are certain diets now, prescription diets, that will have those in them. And you've got to be careful, because you don't want to give them, you've got to actually give them a correct dose of omega-3s and omega-6s. If you give too much of the of those fat-free fatty acids, that can actually be pro-inflammatory.
Aren't they, salmon, right?
Yes.
Omega-3s and 6s in salmon and sardines, right?
So you can, you know, you'd have to talk to your vet about, okay, for my dog, how many milligrams of these things do I want to be giving? And then you can get it from a chemist if you want to add it to the diet, or you can just simply buy the diet with it in there.
Yeah.
Glucosamine, chondroitin, those are two products that help to rebuild cartilage. So you've
stuff
probably
I've been on.
And I was going to say, you're looking at me like, yeah, mate, I know all about it, yeah. Yeah, so, and I guess the dogs, the sort of dogs we're talking about, the breeds that are predisposed, any sort of medium to large giant breed dog, any heavy dog, you know, they're gonna be predisposed to that degenerative joint disease, is what we call it.
So a lot of that, what you're talking about, is actually prevention rather than treatment as well, right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, yes, all of that will prevent it, especially the weight, you know, keeping your dog lean. But certainly when we see these dogs in clinical practice and we diagnose them with arthritis, part of the treatment regime is to get them to lose weight, which can be tricky, right? Because remember, half the time we've got these dogs, they're geriatric. And if you've got a geriatric dog that's overweight and painful, you know, even swimming can be a challenge, right? So it's hard to get them to burn off the calories. Well, now, these days, there's a diet, that one particular diet, that will actually increase their metabolic rate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's specifically designed for, you know, the couch potato, so that they burn calories rather than, in the old days when we were trying to get dogs to lose weight, we'd have a calorie restrictive diet. The dog would be begging for food because they're starving. Yeah. Well, this diet is a high protein diet, and protein gives good satiety. So they feel full, and they're not begging for food, and they love it, by the way. Mm. You've got to be careful because they'll break into the bag and try and eat, but it's delicious, as far as I can tell. but they do lose weight provided you feed them for the body weight you want them to be. So on the back of the packet, let's say you've got your dog's 30 kilos, but he really should be 25. And you'll need to have his body condition assessed by your vet, right, to know that, okay, yeah, really his ideal body weight will be 25 kilos. On the back of the packet, it'll say, for weight loss, you know, for an ideal body weight of 25 kilos, this is how much you feed.
And all those foods, no matter what kind of food you're buying, they should all have a good feeding guide on their,
correct,
their packaging. And that's important to stick to that feeding guide. And that feeding guide is without treats.
Well, that's right, yeah. So and that's where people get
you
trapped.
Need to factor in your treats into that feeding guide, which, you know, people go, okay, it's a 10-kilo dog, I'm going to give it 200 grams of food
cheese
a day. And then the cheese tax comes in, and then, here I've got these jerky strips, blah, blah, blah. You're adding that onto the food, so you need to pull back on the meals if you want to give treats throughout the day.
Well, here's the thing, is that 90% of your dog's intake should be a premium dry food, a premium, so by premium brand, and ideally it would be a brand of food that has been independently attested by the American Association of Food Control Officials.
AFCO approved.
So, yes, exactly, AFCO approved. So the reason we say that is because AFCO will do the studies to ascertain that this is a complete and balanced diet, complete meaning got all of the minerals and vitamins that dog needs for that lifestyle, and balanced means in the right proportions. So that should represent 90%. So what you don't want to do is say, here, look, you can have some cheese and some biscuits or whatever and cut down that food by 50%, because that's where all the good nutrients are. So you've got to be careful about what feed. Like I say to people, you know, if you're going to give treats, just give them something lean. I mean, they'll love it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, baked chicken.
Sure.
Delicious.
Go for it.
That's what we give them in the clinic when they come in for the, like, especially puppies, they come in for their first vaccine, right? They walk in, they're just like, oh, this place looks pretty epic, you know. They haven't had an examination yet. And we're very cognizant of making their first experience positive. And so we're dishing out the treats left, right, and centre. And when we go to actually give the needle, we use the smallest needle that we can find, which is a very...
What's it, like a 25 gauge? 25 gauge, yeah.
Yeah, and I've actually stabbed myself in the hand with one of these 25 gauge needles before.
It's
accidentally. It's, but,
it,
you know...
But that's, you're talking about an intramuscular, not a subcutaneous, right?
Well, I'm... Yeah, that, and to me, it was intramuscular. I was actually showing a client. I was showing a client. I was doing a horse. This is years ago. I was working out at Dabra, and I had this horse, and the guy, I was going to do a nerve block on this horse's foot, right? And the horse was fully awake. He wasn't sedated or anything. And the guy goes, "Can you put a needle in this thing?" I said, yeah, but that's okay. It's a very small needle. It's not going to hurt him. Here, look, I'll show you. And I had, I think, some lignocaine or some sort of local in the syringe, and I was just trying to show him how fine the stream was that was going to come out of this needle. So I put full pressure on it with my hand in front of it, needle shot across it and then went full into my hand right up to the hub. Yeah, so I got to experience firsthand just how, you know, that feels.
Dude, you just took one of the jugular.
Really? Yeah, totally. Anyway, so we use this really small needle for the puppy, and when we do it, we just scatter all these little chicken treats, these baked chicken treats, low fat, onto the table, then they're munching those away. And honestly, 99% of them don't even know they're getting an injection.
Well, I'm a raw feeder, but it's AFCO approved raw foods.
Is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did not know that. That's so interesting. Okay,
that's the way I go. But but your point is absolutely accurate with that as well, with regards to providing that entire diet. Mm. But then, you know, it's got to be that food, and then you just factor in the little bits of treats and make it a lean treat and happy days. Mm. Hey, we've got a caller here. Who have I got? I've got Jeff from Wynnum. G'day, Jeff.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, mate. Tell us about your Jack Russell.
Righto, he's 17 years old.
Wow.
He's blind and he's deaf.
Oh, the poor fella.
He eats well. Mm-hmm. He plays. We take him down to go to the toilet, but he barks first.
Oh, so
we take him down 13 stairs, and he comes back up himself.
Yeah.
He knows where he's going. He finds the pet door, no problems. But we're just wondering, hoping we're not just keeping him alive, you know, for the sake of ourselves. But he's sort of quite really happy.
Yeah.
He plays, he does everything.
Yeah, that's it. Often it's a common conundrum, Jeff, sometimes when we've got these really, really old dogs, you know, and to try and figure out when is the right time. Because, you know, we're responsible for feeding them and providing shelter and, you know, exercise and all of that. But we also need to be responsible for when is the right time to put them to sleep. And, you know, sometimes I do come across people who have this sort of, I think, unrealistic expectation that my dog's just going to pass away in his sleep and it's going to be this kind of beautiful, gentle thing. And sure, it occasionally does happen. But for the most part, you know, what we see, at least in clinical practice, is, you know, these dogs will deteriorate to the point where their quality of life is diminished. And then you've got to make the call. And it's usually done in conversation with your vet. I mean, they're the guiding light to this, right? Our role is to try to provide insight for people so they can make an informed decision. Now, in this situation, the way I would sort of approach this is to say, okay, if he's not in pain, which it sounds like he isn't, right? He's ambulating freely. You're walking him down the stairs. He can get back up pretty comfortably. And so we can sort of be fairly confident he's not painful. He can still eat and drink. That's obviously vital. He can still toilet, you know. The only things that he's missing are really his vision and his hearing. And that doesn't seem to be compromising his quality of life too much. It would if you moved house. He would not know where he is. You know, it would take him a while to try and figure out what's going on. He'd be bumping into things, and it'd be pretty, it'd be a bit chaotic for him. And I think that would be a real challenge. But because I'm assuming you've been in that place for a long time, that's why he knows his way around so well. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, that's correct.
So at this stage of the game, I would be saying to you, and, you know, the caveat is I would do a full physical examination on this little guy and just make sure that he isn't painful, you know. Then I would say he still has quality of life. He knows where he is. He's not anxious, you know, and he's still got his marbles. So, yeah, I would keep him going.
And he sleeps on the end of the bed.
Oh, beautiful. Where do you sleep?
Well, Jeff, when he's not taking my spot, I've got to sort of shove him over.
Jeff, thanks so much, and we wish you and your Jack Russell all the very best, mate. Yeah, obviously a good pet parent there. Mm. I've got a text here, Dr. Jones from Joseph in Townsville. Would a dash hound be okay in a small apartment in the city when my partner and myself are at work all day?
Yes and no. I guess it depends how many hours of the day you're out for. And you just want to, these are the things I'd think about, right? The size of the apartment probably isn't going to matter too much. I mean, because, you know, humans have to live in it. So there's going to have to be a minimum amount of space for you to get around. And that will provide some sort of room for the dog to do zoomies and this sort of stuff. But ultimately, he's going to absolutely need a walk twice a day. That's your minimum commitment there, right? And I'm not talking about 5 minutes. Like, he's going to need to get out. He's going to need to sniff. He's going to need to do his wee. He needs to look around. In terms of toileting, you know, an adult dash hound should be fine if you're out of the house. And certainly, it would probably be appropriate to set up a toileting area in the apartment for him, just so he had the option. Other than that, you know, I don't see why not. You know, he's not a medium to large breed dog, and but I think the exercise is going to be super important. And maybe I'd be pretty committed to training the little guy, because, you know, dachshunds have a tendency to bark. They love barking.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you're just going to be need to be aware of what the neighbours might think if he's barking. For getting him exercise is going to be key to that, because when dogs are tired, they're actually less inclined to bark, you know, when they're exhausted.
Well, they're stimulated physically and mentally. Mm. They're cool, right? Mm. They're like, okay, I don't need to yap about and run about and do my zoomies. I'm pretty cool.
Yeah. And I you know, you do come across the odd dash hound that's well-trained, and they are just a delight.
Yeah, I love dash hounds.
Yeah. I mean, I think vets across the board refer to dash hounds as land sharks, but it's pretty funny. But, I mean, I actually haven't met too many of them that are too naughty in the consult room. There's the odd one that'll, you know, but they're beautiful. I mean, they're beautiful dogs, especially well-trained ones.
Ah,
well, that goes for any dog, I suppose.
It does, right? Yeah. And it's amazing how different breeds have different personalities. I love that. You know, you get a stubborn bulldog.
Yes.
And then you'll just get these so gentle greyhounds, and then you get the happy retrievers. You know, it's the personalities.
I'm confident. I've got this theory that Labradors just recognise other Labradors. Like, I've seen it in Digby. He's like, right, here we are.
There's another lad.
You know, like, never met this dog before, but they just have this way about them that's just different to other dogs, even different to a golden retriever. You know, they're just golden retrievers. To me, is a bit more laid back, not quite as excitable. Yeah. You know. Can be a bit anxious sometimes, but the Labrador Retriever is just this sort of happy-go-lucky, you know, larrikin, what are we doing now? What are we doing now? You know, that kind of thing.
I'm up for it. Whatever it is, I'm up
and
for
if
it.
I was a dog, I'm pretty confident I would be a Staffy.
Do you reckon?
I'd say so. Just a
see, I think I'd be a Neo-Mastiff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Just
yeah.
Kicking back.
Yeah, just, you know.
Salivating everywhere.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's 28 minutes to 12. My guest has been Dr. Sam Jones. Where can people find you? My local vet,
yep.
Socials, websites. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, thanks, Johnny. We're out at Capalaba. So if you just go to mylocalvet.com.au, you'll find our website and you'll learn all about us.
And they can ask questions on your website as well?
Yeah, you can send us a message. Yep. And we're on Facebook, Instagram, all those sorts of things. So keep an eye out for us. Yeah, we post some funny stuff from time to time. We used to have Dress Up Friday, last Friday of every month. It's just tapered off in the last little while. We've just been too busy. But that was good fun. We did it for about 3 years, four years.
Funnily enough, my next guest that I'm going to talk to in a couple of minutes, he's all about dressing up as well. It's Ed Ross from Trademunt, who do the colourful tradie shirts.
Oh, they are awesome.
They are awesome.
Send them around, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
A conversation starter. I think that's what it says.
This is a conversation starter.
Bingo.
That's coming up just after Talking Heads. Hey, Dr. Sam Jones, mate, that was awesome. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Johnny.